I run the family business.
I run the family.
Florida politics is my playground.
I walked away from it all in favor of the politics of the playground.
Neither of us suffers from a lack of opinions.
This is
He Said,
She Said.
Welcome to podcast number 3 that we are getting out of our road trip to the Florida Democratic Convention and Gala.
I don't think we have ever had such a successful trip to Disney World before.
Define success.
I mean, we got a lot of stuff done in a short amount of time. This is a lot of content in a pretty quick trip.
Oh, sure, sure. I thought like there was some times where I think you had 5 fast passes set for us inside of 2 hours, and that was a very successful time.
Not possible to have 5 fast passes. You can only get 3.
Oh, I thought you could get them reset if like...
You could get them reset, yes, once you've used all 3. So once you've gone through a cycle of 3 fast passes, pardon me, then you can add another one. And then once you've gone through that one, you can add another one.
There was a miracle day where we got into the park and you got us like Rapunzel, Elena. Then we did like Dumbo.
No, there was a miracle day where we had breakfast at Chef Mickey's. Then we went to Epcot and we saw Mulan and Pluto. And we had lunch with the princesses at the Askerhus Royal Banquet Hall.
Yes, I remember that.
Then we got to take a blissful nap back at our hotel. We were at the Grand Floridian in the Everglades suite. And then we went over to Magic Kingdom. We got to see Rapunzel and Elena. And we topped it off with dinner at Cinderella's Royal Table. So that was the character dining trifecta. And that was for Ella's...
Third
birthday.
Yes.
Yes. It was her 3rd birthday. And we had a special Rapunzel birthday cake delivered to Ella's table at Cinderella's Royal Table.
Longtime listener, first-time caller Mike Griffin sent in a message to me. Congratulations on his appointment to the University of South Florida Board of Trustees. He asked, where is the best place to go to dinner at Walt Disney World? And I think...
On property?
On property.
With kids or without?
They're bringing Maverick.
Okay.
He didn't ask it that way. I gave him my answers before. And so...
Morimoto Asia?
Oh, I didn't tell him about that one. Oh, wow.
Disney Springs?
I forgot all about the Disney Springs restaurants, which are awesome.
Boathouse at Disney Springs, which is also a good one for Mav.
My number one choice is the Todd English restaurant.
Blue Zoo is my top
choice. Blue Zoo by Todd English is it at the Swan or the Dolphin?
I can't remember which
Whichever one it is, downstairs. That's my favorite restaurant there.
I would have put that as my number 3 suggestion.
Okay, what's your top one?
Morimoto Asia was my top one.
Yeah, that's so much fun.
It's a beautiful restaurant. It's fun. It's great food. There's something that everyone will like. And I really think the Boathouse is another great option.
The Boathouse is fun. He had asked about what's the great restaurant in the Grand Floridian, Albert and...
Victoria and Albert's.
Victoria
Don't
and
waste
Albert's.
Your money.
That's what I said to him. I said, it
one
is...
One of the worst meals we've ever had.
It's not
one of the worst. I apologize. It's one of the most overpriced. It was a huge letdown with how much had been built up by everyone.
Right.
You and I were both like, this is not that exciting of a menu.
You know what? It's really no better than the food on the cruise in the regular.
Correct.
And which tells you, I think we kind of don't give the food on the cruise enough credit. It's pretty good, but it's like, as a tasting menu goes, it's not the most, they're like super excited about like a pate course and a cheese course that's got like gorgonzola. And I'm like,
their caviar selection was laughable.
Yeah. I don't even remember that. I think it's one of the most overrated experiences there.
For the price point, because it is an incredibly expensive meal.
It's like $175 a head, right? Maybe more?
No, we paid a lot more than that, babe.
For just the meal. I don't know what the alcohol was.
We didn't even order a big bottle because they didn't even have a big bottle.
They didn't have big bottles.
When you told me the price of the meal, I was floored. It was one of the most expensive meals we ever had.
Okay.
And it's a 6-month waiting list to get into the restaurant. So you really just expect it to be incredible.
I'd rather eat at is it Nisswa's?
Narcoozies.
Narcoozies.
Which is on the waterfront at Grand Floridian.
Right. I think that that's one.
That's an excellent meal. And pro tip, if you're staying in the club levels of the Grand Floridian and you're very kind to the people at Narcoozies, you can order it through room service.
What is the restaurant that Ella met Pooh Bear and Tigger?
Yeah, I cannot remember. Crystal Palace in the Magic Kingdom.
I thought that was a pretty good meal.
It's a buffet.
It's a buffet, but I thought it was a good experience. Like, that's a good place to bring a young child if you're...
It is, if your child's not afraid of mascots.
Right.
Mascot characters can be very scary to some children. So,
okay.
Yeah, so I don't always recommend it.
Who could be scared of Pooh
Bear? Some people are scared of the big mascot head.
I love Pooh Bear.
All right, so I'm really glad that yet again we found a way to dive deep into Disney World on a podcast all about Florida politics.
All of our tweets are like at Disney. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah, we're all about Disney all the time. But you had some winners and losers coming out of the convention.
I did. All right, so my big winner this weekend was, and I wrote a whole piece on Florida politics. It's worth checking out because there's a, it's just dripping with snark. But my big winner was Nikki Freed.
Without question. Okay. She obviously was the big winner. It was the Nikki Freed show. If there wasn't Nikki Freed, there would have been no personality at that convention. There would have been nothing to be excited about. Like, normally you go to a convention and there's fun flyers, there's fun promotional materials. There was none of that. The only thing we got was Nikki Freed's amazing posters and t-shirts. And then the Bernie Bros were out with their horrible stickers.
I had him as a winner for the convention.
Who?
Andrew Gillum.
Ugh. I mean, I just can't call him a winner. Again, someone who leaves all the money in the bank and loses a race that he should have won.
But he was like, he is adored by this crowd still.
And he respects them so much that he didn't even announce to them that he was going to run for governor again. He waited till he was out of state to do that a few days later.
Well, he hasn't made it official. He's just...
But he said it.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't matter.
It's kind of an underreported story that he's saying.
We're splitting hairs at this point. And that's how much he respects these people. He respects these people so much that he took their money. He didn't spend it all to get elected. And instead, he's now paying himself... Listen, John Morgan's not wrong on this one. And now he's paying himself to keep his name in the headlines under, you know, the guise of registering voters. Yeah, I'm sorry. I don't think he's a winner.
Someone who I had as a winner was Jonna Shalala. She was at the convention a lot. We didn't see her, but a lot of people, she was the only member
that was Congress
there. Charlie Crist was in the district, by the way. We checked that for the record.
I mean, I already knew that. Why are you telling me? I'm the one who told you.
I know. I'm joking because I wish Charlie had been there. I thought...
He had important work in the district.
I thought one of the big winners this weekend was the bartenders at the Ale and Compass Lounge, which is the bar right off of...
They could have been bigger winners if they had been a little bit more adept at their jobs.
I would. All right. So they were big winners because they were just going to make money no matter what. But they could have hustled.
They could have hustled and made a lot more money.
Right.
They were really, really slow.
I was ready to buy. You know me at a bar with people. I would have been buying drinks and stuff like that. And
I mean, we bought a bottle of champagne and I couldn't get the woman's attention.
I know.
I'm like, I just bought individually. I just spent more money with you than anyone else sitting at this bar. I'm certain. And I can't even get you to fill my glass.
Just a weird note, by the way, about the bar. Remember we saw Jacob Engels there? That was like another one of these underreported things. Because he's such a, I mean, he is literally a national level provocateur at this point. You know, attached to Roger Stone, banned on Twitter. I was expecting him to do something crazy. And I think he just happened to be in Disney, maybe for Pride or something like that. It was weird seeing him there. He kind of went underreported.
I didn't think it was weird. I thought that he was there for some fodder that he could use for future
stuff.
But
it never materialized.
Well, because not everybody there recognized who he was. It was a very dark bar. That was a weird bar, too. Super dark. Super, like, stuffy. It really felt like you were in the galley of... It felt like you were in, like, a 1970s yacht club... Men only bar.
Other than the men only part, that's my ideal bar. Like I love the darkness and the corners, and I would have actually liked to have held court there longer.
And if just, we could have had better service, we would have held court there longer. That but was, it just was, I mean, the service just wasn't that great. And the seating wasn't that, it was not conducive to holding court.
Okay, so those are my winners. Why don't we get to our first guest? I thought he was a winner. I put him down as a generically as the Democrat dads. And I said the best change from previous annual gatherings was not scheduling it for Father's Day weekend. With that, plus the event being held at family-friendly Disney World, several dads took advantage of the opportunity to mix family and work, not just myself, but others. I think Kevin, Kate, and his family are still on the safari ride at Animal Kingdom. Those kids are so adorable.
They're back home now. They're celebrating his son's birthday.
Oh, are they?
Yes. Okay. I just saw Kevin's lovely wife made this incredible homemade birthday cake, and they're at the Southwood pool celebrating his birthday.
They are good people.
They are.
We got to, I hazed him throughout the weekend on Twitter, but then we finally got him on. And so let's talk to Kevin, or let's listen into our interview with Kevin, Kate from Saturday night, right before the convention. Joining us now is communications impresario Kevin Kate, who I want to introduce. Should we list off all of the Kates that he is related to that we like even better?
That would, oh, if you were going to go that way, that's like a horrible way to say it. But yes, your wife and your children definitely outrank you, but I think you would agree with that assessment.
Well, I've got dad, but I've also, I got to say, as far as a podcast goes, your brother Chris is a big inspiration to me, was probably the first podcast I think I appeared on when he was doing Fluid in Floridian, and now he's like an award-winning, nationally recognized podcaster on Parenthood. So you're here at the convention. Who are you repping? Who are you working with here? I know you've got a lot of good clients, but this is as much the Kevin Kate show as it is any particular candidate.
We are all here for one reason, and that is to win in 2020 to make sure not only at the top of the ballot we end this disastrous presidency, but also all the way down the ballot at our state and local level.
Do you have any early favorite that you're backing?
Well, anybody but Trump, number one. But number two, I'm not getting involved right now in the presidential cycle as far as the top of the ticket is concerned, but certainly in the immediate future, I'm working on Mayor Buddy Dyer's campaign in Orlando to make sure that he's reelected. That's a crucial city in this 2020 election, but he's being reelected in 2019. So that's where my little bit of my focus is. And
so I appreciate your politically like correct non-answer. You're not really being paid by anyone to endorse them, but I actually am a newly registered Democrat.
I saw that. Thank you so much.
You guys have way too many people in the primary.
Hold on. So Gillum only has to register 999,000.
No, I'm going to make it very clear that I don't count as one of his.
Too late. It's already counted.
I'm not one of his. Sorry. I love you, Kevin, but you have too many people running in the primary, so I can't pay attention to all those people. Who should I pay attention to? So I don't need you to pick one. Give me a handful of Democratic candidates for president that we should look at and why we should.
Sure. If I was like Peter and a betting man, which I'm not, especially on politics, I don't do that trade thing that you do. I can't
predict
remember
it.
Predict it.
But you're a master at winning primaries.
This is true. Nobody knows how to win a primary and lose a general like I do. Although we won.
There's our tagline for the, the next edition.
Although we've got Nikki's in there. So if I was a betting man, I would look and see who has the most potential to get the odds. I would look at Kamala. I would look at Mayor Pete.
See, I love Kamala.
I think both of them have very strong cases and very
Kamala's growing on me, by the way.
Strong constituencies. I think that the ultimate litmus test for these candidates, almost similar to our primary in 2018, was who's going to be able to stand next to Donald Trump on a debate stage and give it to him. And Democrats are looking for somebody, and I think both of those candidates have a potential to do that. Biden, I think, has a really tough role to play as the presumed front runner, we'll see what happens there, but I'm not...
As someone who has taken out the presumed front runner in a primary, you speak from experience.
I do.
Yes.
I do.
I like Kamala. I think like what you said, she would unnerve Trump, like, because he's such a racist
bigot. She would prosecute him,
A strong black female, he just would not know what to do.
Because he wouldn't know who to insult first, women or African-Americans. His head might just explode because there's just too much hatred in him for everything she represents.
Exactly. I mean,
I think if you could tell me right now, Biden, Kamala Harris, that's the ticket. Do you take that and go? Now, I know the Democrats, especially the ones in this room, would never agree to that. But if I could have that as a moderate on either side against him, I'm all in for that.
I think Biden would be a great vice president. He's proven himself again. So
just like you thought, you know, gosh, I don't want to go back. Let me ask you a tougher question. Is Gillum still surging?
Yeah, I mean, this is a movement, not a moment. I think if you can, he can fill a room bigger than Ron DeSantis. I think his national platform is certainly larger than Ron DeSantis. If you look at it from just a simply movement perspective, I think he's changed the culture of our party. I think he's continuing to lead where the party is going. And you see that in the way that the candidates are interacting with him. And you see that in the way that certainly the crowd last night interacted with him. He couldn't move. He is still, moving this party forward in a surge.
And you're really good at convincing people about the Gillum surge, because I don't know if anyone remembers, but you convinced my husband pretty soundly. He predicted a Gillum win by how many points?
7.
Your wife said who was going to win?
No comment.
Right. So you're doing a really good job.
He was right in the primary. He was right in the primary.
Well, and I will say, like, it doesn't matter, though, because, like, if you bet $100 and you get to $200, and then you put the $200, you try and double up and you end at zero, you know, I still get tagged more for the...
Holy shit, I have to interrupt you, because walking out right now is Patriotic Minnie.
Oh, my gracious.
Mickey.
Wow.
Oh, my gosh, that's incredible. Wow. And Donald and Goofy.
Michelle is leaving Kevin, Kate. She's going to get pictures
There's
right now.
There's only one
wow.
cast
like,
member.
Kevin, Kate just got... It
Trumped.
Was, it was like Election Day all over again for him. He just got... I mean, just... That's going to make for great audio. Michelle, I mean, it's amazing. Anyways.
They've got a lot of handlers here.
Well, you got all four of them. Ehrenberg's jumping in there.
Yeah, Ehrenberg. Jeez.
It's like Mayor Pete just got here. the Democrats, they might not be able to agree on who is going to be the Democratic nominee for president, but they love Patriotic Mickey Mouse.
That's right.
Who we've never seen before.
We're very grateful for Disney having it here, because normally they have it in Hollywood on Father's Day, so it's hard for me to get there. And they did it this year.
That's
at Disney.
I've never gone to any of these, because they always do Father's Day and Halloween. Are there two events?
Exactly. They said corporate rate at Disney, and I said, how long can I stay?
Right.
So we're here through Tuesday.
Are you really?
Yeah.
Oh, maybe we'll have to stay an extra day.
Yeah. We're hitting
the
parks.
At the beach club or the yacht?
Beach.
You come to Disney not as often as we go Disney cruising. I don't think any person can, but
no.
you're at the parks pretty often.
My kids like it, yeah.
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 How was your vacation? You went out west, right?
It was amazing. I've never been out there.
Like, oh, really?
I've been to Vegas before, and I've done some speeches in Arizona, oddly. I don't know why. So I've been
they
like...
They love the Cates in Arizona.
Huge in Arizona.
Right.
But I'd never been an exploring. I mean, Mount Zion, it was, I mean,
I've hiked up Mount Zion. It's
part of
the riverbed in Mount Zion. I wouldn't go that far up into it, but it is gorgeous out there.
So watch, I'm going to come back from fun with Mickey Mouse and take a right, like a hard left turn here. One of the reasons why I left the Republican Party is because I could no longer be a part of a party that's gun policies I don't agree with. Part of it is something that you kind of lived through. Well, no, you did live through it. You were at a mall in California, where there was a shooting, and you had to go through a lockdown experience. A lot of people have no idea what that is, but this is the world that we're living in now. Can you share your experience with our listeners?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to make it overly dramatic.
It's not about you. I get it. I know that you're like a humble dude, but I think people need to know that you were just at a mall one day. You're a normal guy that everyone knows, and you ended up in a lockdown situation.
Yeah, so essentially what happened... I don't know if I elaborated the whole thing, and I don't know if we have time to, but Andrew and I, we had filmed Bill Maher. We're going to Bill Maher. We'd just done a photo shoot, and we were going into Apple Store because we both lost our AirPods. I'm on number 4 of my AirPods.
I'm on 3. AirPod number 3. You see it on there.
You're on AirPod number 4, I think, because you bought a different set, the wireless charging ones, and so that jumped.
And so We went in there, and essentially, you know, what happens is you see kind of a little bit of panic outside, and we're in the glass window of the Apple store, so you can see the whole thing. It's not like a closed store. And we're beside the manager. The manager said, active shooter, we're going on shutdown. We heard them talking to each other. And, of course, you know, everybody starts streaming to the back, and they say they have steel doors or whatever. And I kind of looked at Andrew. It's like, we should just make a run for it kind of a thing. But then you see kind of like a Godzilla movie, you know, people running and screaming and falling down. And I will say that there were two Apple employees that actually went up to the front of the Apple store and closed the doors. And I just, like, I watched them. And I actually filmed some of it just to see in case something, I didn't publish it, obviously, but in case something was useful. Those Apple employees, like, went up there while they thought essentially these people were running from gunfire and closed those doors. So they're tremendous heroes. And then we spent a couple hours downstairs in the Apple, just kind of like, I don't know, warehouse kind of area, not knowing what was happening. We had actually had a little bit more information because I had some friends listen to the scanners on the media. And I guess what ultimately happened was a guy went into Amazon store, set some books on fire, pulled a gun when they told him to stop, and then ran. What nobody knew, even when we were coming out with hands up or whatever, they didn't know where the guy was. They didn't catch him until 3 days later. And so it was like this weird kind of like, don't tell everybody what's actually happening. So it was weird.
Well, we were in London for that, the terrorist attack over there, and you never know what's going on for those first couple hours. You're saying it now, like, well, I, you know, like, maybe it doesn't seem like much, and you're not playing it up at all. But at the time, when you're close to it, you know, I remember them saying they're stabbing people in restaurants and in this area. Like, now, that wasn't what happened, but they're showing it on the BBC, the right. This triangular area of which you're in the middle.
Yeah.
And so it's the same thing with you, where it's just like, they're shooting people on the streets and you see people running. Yeah, in 6 hours after everything settled down, yes, maybe it was not as harrowing. But you don't know that. You have no clue what it's going to be. Because oftentimes it can be worse.
Were you all together? You were together?
And we had Ella with us. I was in the bathroom, actually, and I could hear sirens. And I was like, that's a lot of sirens. Maybe I should get back to them. And I walked in and he was just ghost white. And he just looked at me and said, take Ella and run. And our best friend Derek was at the table. And Derek is generally just very laid back. Nothing phases him. He just looked at me and he goes, I would take her and run to your room and lock up if I was you. I was like, okay. And so while it was a great outcome, you still had to live through all of the thoughts in your minds, like what you would say to your kids and stuff. And it's just, I just can't believe that's the world that we're in and that we're still sitting here all these years later after Sandy Hook, and we've done nothing in this country.
It's infuriating.
Derek went to Auburn. That gives you the mindset on how laid back and cool he is.
These bullets that you see some of us wearing, we were given to by a woman who, these are actually bullets that she picks up in Miami after shootings, and she basically told us to wear it until we fix it. And so you'll see some of us wearing the bullets on these bracelets. That's where that comes from.
That's an incredible story. I know you have to get going to, we've taken this incredible turn with no segues, by the way. I didn't say segue at all today. I thought you would have been proud of me.
Except you just did.
Right. And so you've gone.
Call it a people mover.
We know that you've got to go to be with Nikki and so forth. You're working on this summer. We've been asking everybody, what are you working on this summer? You're working on Buddy Dyer.
Yep.
Anything else you got? You were busy during session. You had the hospital battle was right up until, you know, a cuts don't heal. That was you came out not, or your organization came out not losing as bad as you thought at the beginning. But it could certainly be another battle going into the 2020 session with Jose Oliva. And then you've got, what else do you have working going on this?
I work on issues I care about during the legislative session to try to blunt as much bad stuff as possible, and then I work in the elections to try to fix it for good.
And with that, we want to thank you for being on, being our friend.
Thanks for coming.
We always, I always tell the story that as long as Kevin Kate is working, because of an incredible little show of generosity you did, the night our house caught on fire,
we woke up at
the Vinoy, and there was breakfast in our room, and it was the scariest night we've ever gone through. and it was breakfast from the Cates.
That's not the only time. Also, when we evacuated for Hurricane Irma and we had a scared little girl, Kevin was the first person to say, here's what we're doing with our kids. Bring Ella to play with them. And as long as you're here, our playroom is her playroom. Come on over. That's the special person. Not many people do that. So we appreciate you for that.
My pleasure. My wife is the inspiration for all my kindness.
Well, you are one of the nicest people in Florida politics. And that's people should know that. People should know that the people behind the scenes making a lot of the moves are really good people.
And that's it. We'll end it there.
Thanks for joining us. Go have fun at your reception.
And Mickey's right over here.
That's our buddy, Kevin Cate. I mean,
he's literally one of the very best people. I know I say that a lot, but Kevin really is just a great person. He's a great dad, a great husband, and he's really good at what he does. And people like to make fun of him sometimes because he's so awesomely...
self-promotional?
Yeah, sure. And, you know, he's got this picture-perfect family. So people like to throw some arrows sometimes because they just want what he has.
If you were having a hype video made about you, like...
Listen, I don't know why we haven't hired Kevin Cate to make Ella Joyce's birthday videos.
Oh, it would be amazing. Like, I mean, he could have that, like, you know, the ad he did for Gillum walking down the street?
Right.
We need that. But for Ella, she's just walking to school. Like,
I mean, honestly, one day when Ella gets a horse, I'm going to have Kevin make a hype video of her and her horse.
He's the best.
He's the best.
All right. So finishing up from the front end of the podcast, here are a couple of my losers. And you tell me whether or not you agree or not. I had Uncle Joe down as a loser because not only was he neither in Iowa or Florida, I guess he had his granddaughter's graduation, I get that. But I thought, like, he could have recorded an original video message for his friends in the Sunshine State, and he did not.
He should have done something. I agree with you that he was a loser here. He had no presence either. He should have had someone out there passing out promotional materials. He should have had someone there getting people excited for his campaign. Joe Biden doesn't win the nomination without Florida. He really should have been here. And don't tell me that he couldn't have popped in to the convention on Friday night and then still made it to his granddaughter's graduation on Sunday. There's just no excuse for him not to have had a presence. And I agree with you. He was a loser.
If there was only another presidential candidate that had done worse, it would have had to have been Wayne Messam, who is from Florida, and nobody's expecting anything from him, but he's from Florida, and all of a sudden, I'm walking in the very, very back of the gala, and I see Wayne, my friend from Florida State. He was vice president. I was a student senator under him, so I have a fondness for Wayne.
I had no idea who he was until Matt Dixon told me who he was.
So he was in the very, very back row. I mean, he was closer to Disney Springs than he was the stage. And so I don't know who did his advance work. I don't know if he did that on purpose, but he should have been up front. Like, that's...
He should have been. He's the only candidate. He should have at least been at the head table. The head table was massive.
There was like five head tables.
There were.
Right?
I mean, it was just ridiculous. So they could have found two seats for him.
So another person who I thought had a weird night, from what I heard, was Audrey Gibson, who people were literally coming back to the bar and they were saying that they thought she had been at the bar for a while and that it was an awkward presence for her up on stage. And she's already got enough critics. Nobody was coming back from that room saying she did a good job during her speech.
No, there were a couple of people who said that she was clearly slurring.
Yeah.
And it appeared that she had had too much to drink.
And remember, half the people on stage...
And I am not saying that. I'm just saying that's what people reported to me. I don't want to be accused of...
Imagine what they were saying about us. Remember, the people that were on that stage, half of those people were ready to get rid of her midway through session. So it was just an awkward moment for her altogether. You know, she just had some problems, I think. Which leads us into the second interview that we had, a Democrat leader in the Senate and a top Democrat fundraiser, Oscar Brannon.
It was probably the most fun interview of the weekend. It was the last one we were filming.
Oh,
so
yeah,
we're wrapping up.
We're definitely ending on a high note here with Oscar.
And everybody was a little
Beth
loose
Matuga.
And happy.
Beth was supposed to be our guest, and we were going to talk to her about, you know, Senate races and some of the technical aspects of fundraising.
And then Oscar saw Kevin and had to come get involved. So then we said, well, why don't you stay? And this is how the magic happens when you are recording live from a political event.
So let's go to this two-on-two interview with Oscar Brandon and Beth Matuga. So we were going to do a very nice, pleasant interview with Beth Matuga, the finance guru for all things Senate Democrats. But then one of the people she raises a lot of money for in the past dropped in. And so why don't you introduce yourself, sir, so that we can get this over with?
So I am Senator Oscar Brandon from District 35 on my way out. But I have had an illustrious, to say the least, career in the Florida legislature. Not to toot my own horn at all. Hashtag humility, keeping it real. I am happy. I have been looking forward to getting on.
Oh, I'm sorry. Let me stop. I thought you were Keone McGee. Let me start this over. Wait a second. No, Keone. Whoa. Okay.
Oh, so Alan Williams. Yes.
I didn't. Can we? I'm sorry. That is not Alan Williams. That is not Keone McGee. That is, I will say, you are definitely one of the more interesting, more outspoken members, but you're also one of the more passionate. You were Democrat leader the year before this last one for 2 years. You have fought the good battles, but you've also, I don't know, Tallahassee is a company town, and you have also, people have been able to reach across the aisle and interact with you. Everybody, I think, is your legacy going to be the great press skit from 3 years, I think it's 3 years now, with Joe Negron speaking and then you doing...
It was Andy Gardner.
Oh, it was Andy Gardner, that's Andy. Right, yes.
Right, Joe's, I can't remember what I did on Joe's, but Andy's, I did the angry interpreter. Yeah,
and you just, when I saw that, it reminded me that, you know, at the end of the day, Democrat, Republican, you guys are all still one of 40. You're all members. That's something that people on the outside, they'll never understand. They don't get the long hours and the commissions and the meetings and all that. And I just, if there was a value to a press kit, when I saw that and the whole room just dying, I think it came through that night.
I hope that that's something that people, a legacy that I can leave, which is that, you know, we're all here to represent who we were elected to represent, and we have to respect that, whether it's a me or a Alan Hayes. I have to understand, and that's the things that I've learned.
That's some ebony and ivory stuff right there.
It is. You know, I've been the ranking member or the vice chair of a committee for Alan Hayes since I was in the House. So me and him have had to work together quite often. And what I've learned about that is where he's from, right? And I think if you know where someone's from, it's much easier to deal with them. What I've tried to do is explain to my colleagues where I'm from and what built me, right? What Miami Gardens is like, what Liberty City is like. And these are the areas that I grew up in. They're the people I represent. And I don't expect somebody from Umatilla, Florida, to know what that's about. I don't expect him to walk into committee and know that. He only knows that if I explain it to him, which is why I have to take time to talk to them, get to know them, listen to them, and then be able to explain it to them. And I take pride in a lot of the work that I've done in the legislature has been not just sitting in the committee room, but it's been outside of it. And it's not been about issues. It's been more about letting them know about me and learning about them.
Now, Beth, you're with us. You were actually our our scheduled guest. I always say, and if the entire Democratic apparatus had the staff that ran Senate campaigns, this would be a very purple state. You guys do it. And I will say, it's not just me who says that. It was actually Ryan Tyson who said that to me first. The Associated Industries of Florida guy, he was at AIF at the time, and he said, man, that Senate Dem staff, they have got some professionals that if some of the statewide campaigns had you all, if some of the overall party had you all, tell us where you come from. Tell our audience you're kind of you're a behind the scenes person. So not everybody that's going to be listening is going to know where you came from. So give us a little background on where you came from.
Thank you. You're very kind, Peter. And so is Ryan. So I have been at this, if you can believe it, 2020 will be my 20th year. The year 2000 was my first legislative session. And I have been doing this for a very long time for Democrats. I've seen the good, the bad, and the ugly, and the very, very ugly. I have always tried to approach this as a long-term goal. And by this, I mean getting Democrats just a little bit more power. Maybe it shouldn't be the path to power, but a path to a little bit more power. That would be nice. We didn't get in this fix overnight, and we're not going to get out of it overnight. And so I have always kind of tried to play the long game here. And yeah, I normally try to stay a little bit behind the scenes. I think that staff many times are like children. They should be seen and not heard. And I've been fortunate to work with some really amazing legislators and senators, Senator Brannon among them, who have given us the opportunity to run programs like Senate Victory that are successful and capable. And that starts with raising enough money to fund them.
So over 20 years, you have a lot of great experiences to pull from. Mm-hmm. What is probably the most memorable thing you have been able to do in your career?
Geez, Michelle. The most memorable thing.
I thought she was going to pop you for the children are supposed to be seen and not heard question, but she let you slide on that one.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm not going to be mean.
Well, to be clear, I don't have any children. I don't really know how they work, so.
Sometimes you do. Like, we have been at conventions where, like, if Ella was here right now, she would have her pink pool floaty toy, mm-hmm. and she would be campaigning throughout the entire atrium.
Or last night when we were recording the podcast from the Martha's Vineyard over in the Beach Club, the hotel kindly set up an easel and canvas for her with paints, and she was just painting away. But again, and then maybe she spilled her water glass on Screven. Well, not on him.
Wait, are you saying that Screven Watson came to Disney?
Oh, shocking. I know. Shocking, right?
And to answer your question, Michelle, one of the more memorable experiences that I had, in 2012, I was working on a little bit of an odd campaign. It was for the merit retention of three state Supreme Court justices who have since left the bench. And, of course, the merit retention system was created by Governor Askew, who is one of my personal heroes. And
me too, by the way. I worked at the Institute of Government and spent some time, was blessed. I didn't know how lucky I was at 19, 20 years old.
Yes.
You're like, who is this old guy that's lecturing us about the 70s
yep.
and Nixon and all this? And then you're like, oh, my God, I got to
do that.
Lectured by this old man about the 70s and Nixon.
I took his class and I took his graduate course and had the foresight to record the whole thing. And every couple years I go back and listen to them, and it's really fascinating. But so obviously this was in 2012, and we were working on the merit retention races. Governor Askew is the father of the merit retention system, among the many governmental reforms that he enacted during his tenure. And I thought to myself, I was raising the money for the justices, and I thought to myself, wouldn't it be amazing if the father of the merit retention system, who lives right here in Tallahassee, would come to an event and support this merit retention program that we were running? And so I called him, and I reintroduced myself to him, and he said, well, you know, I normally do not do political events, and I certainly don't do fundraisers. And I thought, I think this is going to be a no. And he called back a few days later and he said, I want to be on the host committee and Donna Lou and I will be there. And that man drove up in a little old station wagon from, you know, the mid 1970s, had the wood panels on it and everything, could barely see above the steering wheel, and walked into that fundraiser and stole the show. It was amazing.
Those things are small victories to the outside world, but they are so huge when you're working so hard behind the scenes. I just don't think people realize what all goes into your job. So that's a high point. What was probably the thing that you were least happy to see happen under your watch?
That I was happy to see happen?
No, least happy.
Oh, least happy. Geez, I don't know where
that
to start.
That doesn't involve Oscar.
Y'all
I mean, I know that 1, 2, 3, 4, but
Y'all know I'm a Democrat, right? Like, I don't know how to pick from the low. Have we scraped the bottom? I'm not sure.
Okay, how about instead of making you go for low, what's the craziest thing that you've ever experienced in your job? Because we like crazy here.
Oh, geez.
There had to have been a request from a donor at some point that you can share. I mean, Brian Goldmayer is not here tonight,
you have one?
But
you have a good one?
I'm sure.
Okay, so might as well. I had...
If it's anti-Disney, it's okay. They're
it's not
going to hear
not,
about it until we leave.
It's not anti-Disney.
Okay.
It's not anti-Disney. I will tell you two stories. They are both about the same anonymous person. I was working on a race where we were doing a photo shoot for the candidate. And we took these beautiful photos, had a very qualified photographer. And when all the photos came back and the print materials were shown to the candidate for approval, the candidate said that that's not where her mole was on her face. And I have an email thread arguing with this person about the fact that I didn't move your mole. Like, that is not a thing that I do. I don't decide that people's blemishes should be in
this
different spots
so
on their face.
Understandable. I mean, I could totally see this happening.
And literally had to argue with a candidate about the fact that, no, legitimately, go look in a mirror. That's where your mole
is. That's where your mole is.
Yeah. So that was a little nutty. There's so many stories.
We're going to have to look. You know, we're going to be looking at everybody's
moles
now.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially, we're going to look to see who this may have been.
You better be careful, Peter, because they move around.
And I will say, I have dealt with a semi-crazy female Democrat running for an office, but she had her husband yell at me instead of her. So,
sure.
But I could have totally seen her arguing about placement of a mole on her face.
Yeah.
And she's here tonight.
Well, I'm not going to say who it is, but you also won't see me give her a hug.
Well, we'll be following her around all night.
Although
and see
she
doesn't
and I,
hug.
It's kind of funny because the battles I go through, which are totally different than you guys go, but somehow it's turned into me versus Mike Hill. Like, I did not, like, Andy Marlette from the Pensacola News Journal called him out. But somehow it becomes that Florida politics,
yeah.
Literally, he said Florida politics is trying to try and do a high-tech lynching towards me. And I'm like, how did this become about what we're doing and not what
right.
you said? And so the reverse of that is, behind the scenes, I've got all these lovely Democrats who are like, we love you so much. And I'm like, man, you weren't saying that 2 months ago.
I didn't send one of those texts.
No, I didn't. You did not send that.
I typed it in, and then I forgot to hit send.
You know who's my big fan on social media?
Who's that?
Your dad.
My dad. Yes, I know you were going to say that.
Your dad, loves
is.
Me. Like,
my dad
he
is.
Retweets all of my stuff.
My dad
stuff.
Does.
I
he
love
does.
Your dad.
He does. My dad does. And I'm like, I know there's one person that knows that that's not the same. That's not Senator Oscar Brainerd, and that's Peter Schorsch.
I love his avatar. What's funny is, for I think like a year, as I was chirping at you, I would put your dad in,
put my
and
dad
I'm just
in.
Like, man, what the hell is up with, and because he's just like Oscar JB or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, his is normal.
And
mine
his is normal. Yours
yeah.
is, and so I would always put his in. And so he became the focal point of so many of my screeds that his phone must have been blowing up. Like, why is this drunk guy in St. Pete
yeah.
blowing up my phone on Friday
yeah,
night?
Yeah, yeah. But on the Mike Hill thing, man, I think, you know, it wasn't a pro him, not pro him. I think it was just, that's just not something we should do as human beings.
And how offensive is it that Mike Hill is trying to minimize what lynchings were and are and trying to make the fact that people are calling him out on his inaction and his refusal to stand up for a minority in the state? I mean, it's horrific that he is trying to make lynching about him somehow.
He took it from the playbook of Clarence Thomas. Clarence Thomas originally
yeah.
pulled that
yeah.
out of the hat. And Clarence Thomas and Mike Hill are from the same school. If per se, you know, the school of, I think the Django character in the Samuel Jackson character in Django is from that same school.
Oh my God.
There's
oh
a
my
guy.
God.
I think his name is Uncle Ruckus from the Boondocks. Check
Thank
out Boondocks.
You for letting us tag Samuel Jackson, even though he's already tried to sue
yes.
us once.
Yeah. No, that was Morgan Freeman.
Oh, that was Morgan Freeman. Yeah. Shit. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to confuse the two.
And then there's Uncle Ruckus.
No, you know who I said he was?
Clayton Bigsby.
And then somebody said I was racist for calling him Clayton Bigsby. I'm like,
okay, so don't worry. I'll
no,
do it for you.
I don't
think. What you need to do, you need to call me sometime. I don't even, you know, I
you said everybody. You knew where Alan Hayes is from.
Umatilla.
Honestly.
Umatilla.
Where? No, I mean, like, I think you understand where, I think yes. That's a philosophical.
Now,
honestly, where is Mike Hill coming from?
So it's completely different to me.
It's a self-hating. Like,
it
I
is.
Try to get
it
hold
is.
Of
and
it.
You know what? And it's, I try not to, I have not been in the business of outwardly shaming Mike Hill, because I think Mike Hill, unfortunately, is a product or a symptom of a much larger problem, that there are a lot of African American people that have been trained to hate themselves.
Did you see Get on the Bus with Spike Lee?
Yes, I did.
Remember when Wendell Pierce
mm-hmm.
gets on the bus and starts yes. talking about being a Black Republican
yes.
and how much money he's making, and they end up throwing him off the bus?
Yes.
You of all the characters,
mm-hmm.
and everybody's like, first of all, we're going to get to tag Wendell Pierce, but of all the characters, like genuine characters, because that isn't a cartoonish figure. I think that's who he is,
well,
where
see,
it's like he's betraying those who came before him.
But he's looking for acceptance.
Yeah.
And that's what's the sad part. I feel like he's reaching out. He wants the people that he represents, that he lives around, to accept him and to make him one of them. And he will do whatever it takes, go above and beyond. Look, sponsoring the Save Confederate statues.
Are you kidding me?
I mean, you know, like, it's one thing to vote for it. It's another thing to sponsor it. And I don't even put it to Black Republicanism, because I think I like Byron Donalds, right?
You
I
have
like
to,
Jennifer
no,
Carroll.
If you don't have Black Republicanism.
Right.
If you don't have Black Republicans, then people will accuse you of being monolithic.
We minimize our political impact
right,
as a race.
Exactly.
And so I don't disagree with it at all. I think Jennifer carried herself as a respectful person.
Right.
I did work with Jennifer. I sponsored bills with Byron. Right. But my
Daryl Roussan was a
Republican
at some point.
My grandmother was a Republican,
right.
and she was an appointee
well, I mean,
of Jeb
think
Bush.
About. I mean, I know that this is not where. I mean, I don't have to tell you this, but remember,
Lincoln
was
slaves,
on,
and that's why
Lincoln's
my grandmother was a Republican.
Was on. The mantle
yes.
of every Black person's home until the civil rights fight.
But what Mike Hill is doing is beyond Republicanism,
right?
Right. What he's doing is a sad cry.
All right. So, and we had Carlos Guillermo Smith on beforehand. We're not going to get rid of CG. We're not going to get rid of Mike Hill. Would it be a victory? Would it be enough of a victory if we were to get the Competitive Workforce Act passed?
I think that would be a victory. And it's unfortunate that we have to call that a victory and it's not just something we're doing. But yes, if that is the spark that we need, if Mike Hill's actions are the spark that makes this happen, then I'm very happy. Because you know what? Let's be honest. None of Mike Hill's bills get heard. They've already minimized
him. No, he's Senator 120, or he's Representative 120 at this point, right?
Exactly.
I mean,
and
he's probably the least effective member.
Exactly. So I haven't been one of those, you know, I don't believe they're going to make him resign.
No.
I mean, as much as I would like him to not represent, you know, an African-American in the Republican Party, I like, if they're going to elect someone else, because I think he has a problem internally. But if they're not going to, I think if we can get something positive out of this, then I will at least call that some sort of victory.
I want to switch gears real quick. I know it's kind of filtering out, which means the reception's going, but... I was on the train last cycle thinking Democrats were going to get it down to 22-18, maybe 21-19. I'm not going to ask what happened because that's a whole.
Why don't you invite me so I can talk about the whole
I
thing?
I will. We'll talk
I'm wide
about
open.
It.
You put another one of these in front of me.
When does it become 21-19? When does it get to 2020? Or how many? Because I don't even think it can physically happen in this next cycle, just because there are not enough open seats. So, unless there's some sort of like weird situation where, like, long shot candidates knock off incumbents, when does it change? Where? Because I do think that that'll be the first place that if Democrats were to ever recapture power, it would be in the Senate. When, if ever, does that happen?
So I started this whole shebang working in Senate, particularly for the caucus, in 2012, in the 2012 cycle. And we had 12 members, and we have 17 now. And back then, I created a little chart called the Path to Parity. And the good news is we're on the path, and the end of the path is 20 members in 2022. And we're chugging along. Again, we didn't get in this fix overnight. We won't get out of it overnight. There's a tendency sometimes for, you know, very high hopes and, oh, we're going to flip the chamber this year. We're going to flip. And I have never sat in front of anyone in the whole time that I've been doing this and said, this is going to be a year. We're going to flip the chamber. So-and-so is going to be Senate president because it's hard work and it takes a long time. And it takes an awful lot of money. And we're always at a disadvantage as Democrats.
I'm sorry. I get so excited about this because I had a conversation with another reporter just maybe 15 minutes ago. Go ahead. You want to?
Did you just call me a reporter? I mean, is that what I am?
Really? No, you're not.
I mean, come on.
You're not. You're correct.
I mean, he's kind of a media mogul.
Exactly. I'm sorry. I had a conversation with a reporter, and now I am talking to a mogul.
And I am certainly not a reporter.
Certainly
I am
not.
I just give certainly commentary. Not. Yeah, I'm Ella's mom, and Ella's I'm good mom. With that.
So, and what I said was, when I got to the Senate in 2010, we were 12. We are now 17. Not a single cycle that I've ever been here for have the Republicans beat us as far as taking a seat from us. And yet, I never hear the story or the narrative of how they continue to lose. And so, we're moving forward, and we have continued to move forward. Now, people want us to move faster, but at the same time, I see snarky tweets like, well, you can't raise from sugar. You can't raise from this person, and you shouldn't. And I always say, I do want to say something.
That's going to be a big takeaway, honestly.
I do want to say something about
the sugar,
who you raise money from. I am purchased by no one, whether they give money to me or they don't give money to me, whether it's FEA, whether it's SEIU, whether it's sugar. I'm only purchased by the people who voted for me to get here. So if you give me money, you're giving me money to push forward the values that I have, whether it be sugar, whether it be Beelzebub himself. I'm taking that money and I'm doing what I believe. And so when you start not taking money from somebody, it implies that whoever gives you money, you're purchased by.
All right.
And so I am purchased by no one.
It's not my job to...
I say that now.
As the guy who loves to be purchased, I'm not going to push back against you being purchased.
But I am purchased.
Or not purchased.
I'm purchased, but in my line of work, I'm purchased by the people that I got to get their votes.
All right. So there is... I don't even know the up or down of it. I do, but I don't want to get into it. There's the battle on the oncologists that have got the carve out that was the last thing added to the healthcare bill. And it's a major battle.
Are you talking about the thing that's totally a West Florida Republican fight?
It's a Miami fight, right? It's Anna Tara versus Anna Maria Rodriguez.
The oncologists?
The oncologists got carved out, the 21st century. It's a very small.
Yeah, but the guy is in West Florida.
I don't even know the issue.
I'm
but
telling
it,
you the
can't
issue.
Say that it is.
It's a West Florida thing.
But
it's Republicans versus Republicans.
They lobbied up.
You know what I call that?
What do you call
it? Wait for it. White on white crime, because I don't really care. I'm agnostic.
What? You can't
go ahead,
say that.
Go ahead.
No, you can't say that.
Why not?
He absolutely can say that.
All right. So, but with that, though.
I said I'm agnostic. Like, let them kill each other.
Well, what do you think about a larger... All right, so, okay. What about, like, a larger battle when you get to, like, Publix versus Walmart for the wall? Is it that? That's still not...
It's not a party fight. Right. It's a total business fight.
Don't you think in a way, all right, since there's a cocktail or two in front of us, isn't that your strength? Isn't that the strength actually of the Black caucus in a way when you get into the intramural battles?
Man, that's why you are a media mogul, because you see that stuff.
Well, I mean.
You're right. It's you know what? Look, how does it affect my community?
Right. It
does.
Publix versus Walmart does not affect your community.
Does it? And if it doesn't.
And it's evenly divided because it's like gambling. You know, the swing vote on most gaming votes is, and a lot of times, is the Black community, because you got white conservatives.
Right.
Who are with no casinos saying, no, we don't want this. And then you got the libertarian kind of lobbyist influence ones who are saying, hey, let's get best bet, you know, full-time poker. And you guys are like, hey, if you're going to put some,
If you're going to put a casino up,
yeah,
why not hire some of the people from my community?
Right.
Because you're going to do it anyway, right?
And I think that's why, like, I've always been a staunch defender of Senator Roussan, because he's like, wait a second, you guys are doling out all this sprinkle money. How about you sprinkle something down in South St. Petersburg on mental health? And he's always been criticized. The budget's passing. the budget is passing.
Oh, in
one
the Senate,
way
we vote
other.
For the he's lucky to get to the Senate because we all vote for the budget.
Right, but he made that. He made a decision early on. Listen, they're going to pass a budget. I should get five projects for my folks. Yes, it is going to give the budget the air of bipartisan. Who cares? There is now a mental health facility.
But you're saying
St. Petersburg.
You're saying House arguments, which I haven't done over a decade. So if you get more,
is that you looking down on the House? Is that what
It is?
Speaking of which, what are you going to do next?
Mayor of Miami Gardens.
Is that official?
It's not official now, so you get it first.
So, wait.
I mean, we're going to tweet it, and we're going to Facebook about
that's
it.
That's fine.
I mean, all of our listeners.
That's fine. Look,
how big is Miami Gardens? I don't like
about 101,000 people. We encompass the Dolphin Stadium, called a race course is there. So it's where I grew up. It's the heart
When's
of
the
my
election?
District. 2020. August
of 2020. All right, so when we get done, we're gonna break some news on this and the Ehrenberg. I mean, this is gonna be the lead.
What's Ehrenberg doing?
Which reporter are you gonna have reach out to him so they can get working on the story while we have fun tonight? Because clearly we're not doing the story tonight.
Ryan Nichols, we have a South Florida reporter. Ryan Nichols has been there, and now we're gonna
do the thing yourself. I appreciate when you call. You know, I owe you a dinner.
But why is he gonna call? He's right here. We're talking to you right now.
Or we could do this dinner because I've been telling him to come to Miami because I owe him a dinner. And it was a lost bet that eventually I won. But the bet was that Janet Cruz wouldn't run for the Senate. And she didn't. So he won. Right? But then she won. But the bet was made that she wouldn't run the first time. And she didn't. But when she eventually ran, she won. But I'm okay to lose that bet. So I've been trying to get him to come to Miami for a dinner
defense,
that I owe him.
I actually don't allow him to travel to Miami very often. It's a little bit of a far trek.
I hear you.
Elle and I don't like to let him travel so much.
I hear you.
If there are investors that want to invest in Florida politics in Miami, then I'll let him go down. But he will be down for the debates.
All right. So
the debates,
along the guise of all Black people look alike. Don't you think
it's the Hamilton thing?
Don't you think that you,
you know,
are
I saw
a
the guy.
Hamilton?
I hope so. He's a very attractive dude, man. He's got hair, which I don't. So I'm gonna go ahead and take it. Whenever you say it, like my dad, that's the one where my dad retweeted. It was really, he's like, you don't look like him.
No, I don't think you look like you don't look like Lin-Manuel. You look like I think the one who played.
Yeah, the guy who sings the State Farm song, or he said he has an insurance commercial too. No,
the guy who played Aaron Burr.
Yes.
The most talented guy from the original run of Hamilton. And Leslie. Odom.
Leslie Odom.
Oh, the Jefferson. Yeah, that makes more sense.
Oh, I don't know who that is. Right. Okay.
So there's a third. So Leslie Odom is Burr.
Okay, that's
which,
what
you know, like,
of.
He's dark. He's right. Like Keone.
Right.
No, he's not.
Who's not dark? Well, he's darker than me. Okay.
He's darker than OB, but he reminds me of the Jeffersonian Lafayette character from it. And it's just like when you said, even when you said earlier a comment, and it reminded me of the inflection that he had. Because Jefferson, actually, that character has probably got the second most amount of stage time. It's Aaron Burr's character. Lin-Manuel's on there a lot, but Jefferson and Jefferson Lafayette is the same person. Mm-hmm. And so have you not seen Hamilton?
I have not seen it.
How have you not got somebody to buy you tickets to Hamilton yet?
So Andrew was telling me about it, but I was like, I don't know if I want to go see it. So.
Well, it's really good. You should go see it.
Yeah, I'm going to go check it out. But I got to save up for it. So go ahead. Because you can't, you know, $5,000, that's a lot of money for one ticket.
It's not that much for one ticket. I'll just let you know.
Oh, really? Because that's what Andrew told me. He paid $5,000.
Well, he didn't
day.
Pay for it,
right,
remember?
I got to stop. That's okay. My dog. I can't be making those
I'm
jokes.
Just saying, having personally purchased tickets to Hamilton three times, it's not that much. Can I make a little bit of a turn? Because we have Beth here, and we have a listener.
I'm not nearly as entertaining as the senator.
One of our original listeners to the podcast, and I actually don't know her in person, but she reaches out to me on social media sometimes. She is a young woman who is trying to break into politics. Mm-hmm. And she wanted to know if anyone had some advice, and I'm kind of a little bit removed now, so I feel like you would be a good person to maybe give some advice on how to break into the process, mm-hmm. like how best to network and really kind of get your foot in the door. Yeah. Because as you know, it's hard to get into the process unless someone welcomes you in.
So my first bit of advice is don't.
And by the way, I don't even know if this young lady is a Republican or a Democrat.
So if she's a Republican, she's going to have a much easier time of it. I'm only being partially flippant. It's really hard. It's a really tough business, right?
It is a tough business.
I don't have any house plants that are still alive. This is why I don't understand kids. I never see my boyfriend. So I guess I would actually I would caution your friend or your contact that you need to think long and hard about if you want to do this for a career. It's one of those things where when you start it, it's very hard to stop because it's all you know, right? I've been doing this for 20 years. It's not like I'm going to wake up tomorrow and be an architect. You get going at something.
You can wake up tomorrow and be a podcaster.
Well, I'm sold.
Sounds good.
It sounds cliche, but you have to have some compelling reason to continue doing this. You have, when your head hits the pillow at night and you look back on your day, like, did you do something that you think is worthwhile? Because it ain't easy. It's really hard. It's a personal toll, a professional toll. My parents still don't understand what I do for a living. Every 2 years, they're like, you have another job? Like, what, is everything okay? Are you okay? So my advice to her is to think long and hard about it, and then to enroll in the Florida State University Master of American Politics and Policy program that I am a professor of.
That is amazing advice. I see this has been interesting to watch. This room was empty. It filled up. Mickey was here. And now clearly everyone has, the tide has gone back out. And now, wasn't Leticia bringing us drinks, by the way, like earlier? What happened to?
She's really fallen down on the job.
Did you get one or did
she?
She
got one.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I didn't even see that. So.
Yeah, he paid everyone. He paid.
Wow, so you really, paid. That yes, was, paid for the, wow, that is some drink. Proof that, very good. All right, so.
He did pay also, just so there's a double confirmation.
Thank you.
We don't want any ethics complaints here. All right, we're going to let you guys go, but we're at the FDP. Wait, what?
I don't want to go. I mean, the thing doesn't start till 7. I mean, why do we have to go now? What do you want me to go smooth with people that I've known?
Okay, so what else do you want to tell our listeners? So, and please get me a cocktail too. Just figure something out for me. Thanks. So what else do you want to tell our listeners?
So,
oh, we have our own, you know, podcast now, Senator. Isn't this great? This is where this has all been going this whole time,
been,
really.
It has been.
So the Beth and Oscar show?
Yes, we can. We can talk about
it. It's what's hot in them
streets.
It's
hot in these streets right now. What's hot in these streets?
You guys are back? You want your show back?
Okay.
No. You know what? While we... Oh that's man. Unfortunate.
That's a sign that
we're definitely taking this
on. So if we're closing, I would like to thank Florida Crystals for their sponsorship of this event.
I think it's very sweet.
I think that's important.
Yeah.
Senator, do you have any other closing remarks or ideas?
Look, I want to be on this show again. I'd like to be a regular. I'd like to co-host if possible. I have a lot to say.
So when I come down for the debates.
The debates. I'll be there.
I'll set up and we'll punch you in. We'll figure it out.
I'm on the board of the Arts Center and everything. So we go to Books and Books. I can get us a reservation at one of the restaurants, you know?
Oh, I can't even imagine what it must be like with you late at night down. Like, it must be like when Jamie Foxx was filming Any Given Sunday down there.
Willie Beeman.
I might even agree to come down there for that now. Willie Beeman of
Miami-Dade. There's a church that we go to and we're going to do a little prayer service. Have a little wine, wafers, and then we'll sit and talk about the Bible, right?
That's exactly what we will do.
I am not going to talk about the Bible, but I want to be clear that this is a package deal, Peter.
All right, then. I think I've got a... It's not... I'm coming. Now, I think Michelle wants to get down there.
But if I can't get down there, Beth, you can fill in as the she said on He Said, She Said for a very special episode. That'd be a cool guest host.
I mean, I don't know. Don't you want to talk about Dade County politics?
I want to.
I have been elected in Dade County for over a decade, over almost 2 decades.
There's a reason
now.
Why we don't send reporters south of Alligator
but it's
Alley.
So interesting.
Listen, all I know is how corrupt it is on some levels because I used to have people shaking me down for pocket money all the time in Dade County. I mean, I can't tell you. There's the one guy who would call me five times a day insisting that if I didn't give him X number of dollars, we weren't getting the Haitian vote. And then I had to pay the Spanish language radio stations to put us on radio.
Yes.
The shakedowns in Dade County are epic.
But see, that's what I'm saying. You hang with me and you don't have to deal with that. I don't have that anymore.
You don't have to worry about that.
I don't have to worry about that, right, man. It's cachet. It's all about your cachet, right? And I can walk into a place and...
Who's running for your seat next? Who's that?
There's four people declared. Right now,
who's the front runner? Is there a front runner?
I would say Rep Jones is probably up front, and there's also Rep. There's a former Representative Stafford is running. Daphne Campbell, Senator Campbell, is running.
Speaking of,
you know, she lives in that district.
And shakedowns.
and then there's a councilman named Irboy Godaro that's running as well from Miami Gardens.
I didn't realize. Okay, I didn't realize that Daphne was running for your seat, considering that she used to live in a different seat, right?
No, David did an article about her living in my district the whole time.
The entire time.
So
it's as much as it's, here's some like white guilt. We make fun of Daphne Campbell, like Tallahassee Capital Media. We're like, oh, look at this crazy shit this person is doing down here.
Yeah.
I gotta believe that nobody knows her district as well as, and I will say that coming from working with Senator Roussan, where like there is a different sense of what's going on. I remember Senator Roussan, the entire salary that he got, he said he literally cashed it and he would put it in his pocket, and it was not walking around money for him, but every person would come up to him and ask them, hey, Senator Roussan, Mr. Roussan, my electric bill is going off.
Are you sure that's Daryl Roussan or that's not the senator from The Wire?
Yeah, right.
Wait, did I just play Davis? No, it was Clay Davis, though. But you know what, though? But what he's talking about is something that's indicative in many of our districts. Right. And I have the same thing. Look, I mean, we raise money.
Some Clay Davis
we
stuff.
Almost raise money to do all of those things continuously.
Right.
And trying to, because there's such a heavy need just for basics in our district. I give you a quick story, and then we can go if that's what you want to do.
Sure.
I'm on my way to.
Hour podcast. You can listen to it from Tallahassee to Miami on Monday.
So.
And 70% of our listeners may be Republicans, but they will surely love this special dispatch from the Democratic Convention.
They will. So I'm in the car. My dad's taking me to the airport to come to Tallahassee. And as we're in line at the stoplight, we see a crowd of people gathered on the street in the corner. And I'm looking over. I'm like, oh, man, Daddy, what's happening? I look over, and all of a sudden, it's people bent over. I see somebody pop up, and it's Daphne. And I'm like, what? And then Daphne sees me in my car, and she's like, Oscar, come over here. So I look at my dad. I'm like, look, that's... I don't know if she was a rep yet or whatever. I'm like, let's get out, let me circle the block and let me go see what's going on. So I get out, I go over there, and a lady is passed out, laying on the ground, and Daphne is helping her. And as I walk over, Daphne's telling all the people gathered, this is Senator Oscar Brainin. This is your state senator. This is Oscar. She's a rep, right? She's a rep at the time. This is Senator Oscar Brainin, and I am Representative Daphne Campbell. This is your senator. And then I say, Daphne, what happened? She says, well, this lady got beat up by her boyfriend, and he kicked her out of the car. And she saw it happen. So she's a nurse. So she got out and she was helping the lady. And she was helping this lady, but the whole time telling everyone that's gathered, she's Representative Daphne Campbell and I'm State Senator Oscar Brainin. So she's got the lady in her arms. Her husband, Daphne's husband is standing there. And everybody around there is seeing Daphne helping this lady on the corner in her district. Police eventually show up. She tells them, hey, I'm Representative Campbell. This is Senator Brainin. We just need to tell you what happened with this lady. And every time before she says anything, she says, I'm Representative Campbell. This is Senator Brainin. So all 14 people gathered around here. And that lady who got beat up and thrown out of her car, and Daphne Campbell, who's a nurse, who was making sure she was okay, knows that Daphne Campbell takes care of her. So when it comes time to vote, all those people are going to say, look, man, there was this one rep. I mean, she's taking care of people on the streets. And she's literally in the streets in her district. And so I got back in the car.
That also sounds like an episode
it
from
does,
The Wire.
Right? It does.
That sounds like some episode out of season four. So, man, if you ever want to get together. All right, so I think the world knows that I am the biggest Wire aficionado ever. you ever want to do an entire podcast?
Oh, I can.
Just do.
It is one of.
Let's just dissect season. Like, there's a show we watch, West Wing Weekly, where they go back and do a breakdown of each episode. Can you imagine if
we could just watch it over and then do a show after.
There are two types of people in this world: people that have watched The Wire and people that have not. Period.
So we can. This is a podcast, so I can say fuck them if they can't take a joke.
Oh, yes.
Beth, it was lovely for you to come on.
I think that's an ending if I've ever felt one.
Beth, thank you very much for joining us. Thank you
kind,
for
Peter. Thank you, Michelle.
All that you do for us. Senator, it is great to see you again. Michelle, do you have any closing parting words, or are you ready to hit the bar?
Bar.
We're ready to hit the bar. Thank you very much. So I just want to be clear. I was probably 3 or 4 drinks in by that time, maybe more, for that interview. And so if it was a little sloshy, I mean, it wasn't like Memorial Day.
I was only 1 drink in, so it was okay.
David Johnson just got back from England, and he was catching up on the podcast, and he texted me. He's like, I listened to the very sloshy, not England, Germany. I just listened to the very sloshy Memorial Day podcast, and if you go back to it, it's sloshy. It's fun. There's a lot of clanging of drinks.
That was the point of that. I mean, it was a happy hour podcast on a holiday weekend. Why not be a little sloshy?
It was. Well, and I think I was getting there on this one. So, I mean, this was just so much podcast material. Next week, by the way, for all of our Republican friends, we are pivoting. We're going to focus on President Trump launching his campaign.
Yes, this did not
Tuesday.
Turn into the Democratic show.
Right.
We just happened to go to that event. We will be doing the same thing at a Republican event in the future. We're just taking opportunities to interview people when we can get them. Because as we've heard from some people, you all do prefer when we interview people live and in person.
Yep. All right. So let's wrap this up, though. I mean, let's do some hot takes here.
Why don't you start with your hot take first?
Well, I mean, I guess my overall hot take will be about the presidential campaign. And I know that we had previously done some rankings on some candidates. I'm still Uncle Joe, and I'm definitely Kamala Harris as my number 2. I really don't have a number 3. But I want to say something, and I guess I'm going to flesh it out more in my writing, but it's going to be where I'm at for the rest of this nomination fight. We should just ignore Bernie Sanders, which no one is going to do. Like, and all the Bernie bros and sisters are going to be pissed that I said that. But people need to realize, if they elect him, if they give him the nomination, they are re-electing Donald Trump for president. Any vote for Bernie Sanders in Iowa or New Hampshire is a vote for Donald Trump in November. There is no way he can win the presidential election. The more I hear about him, the more I see him on the campaign trail, and I've been focused on it, and I've been reading as much about it in advance of the debates that are going to happen at the end of this month. There are so many candidates over here in this field, and I think Trump is trying to almost trick us, not surprisingly, and have the Democrats take out Biden and end up on their second choice. And it's not that he's the second choice of most Democrats. He would just finish second. He would be the Andrew Gillum of the presidential race.
That's exactly what I was thinking, is if Democrats should have learned a lesson here in Florida. You know, they didn't go for the person who was the safer bet in the general. They didn't go for Gwen Graham. They went for the more radical Andrew Gillum. And where did that get them?
If we had ranked voting, ordinal voting, Gwen Graham absolutely would have won the nomination, because you know she was the number 2 choice of all the Jeff Green people, of all of the Philip Levine people. I would even imagine the Andrew Gillum people, if there had been a runoff. And, you know, that's how her father got there, was through a runoff. I think he finished second in his first race. She would have moved on. And we can't engage Bernie Sanders. We can't even entertain him as a possibility. If you are interested in Donald Trump not being president, You cannot give any fuel to the Bernie Sanders movement. You have to go with either Biden. You have to go with even Warren or Mayor Pete or Beto or something like that. But you cannot settle for that socialist from Vermont. So that's my... It's not necessarily a hot take because it's not counterintuitive, but I feel very strongly, very fierce about this opinion.
I agree with you 100% on that one. So that doesn't happen all the time where I agree with you.
What's your hot take?
My hot take is I think Uncle Joe is out for me. I'm leaning towards Kamala now. You know, what we didn't mention was Kamala Harris actually had a good showing. Her husband did a good job at the state Democratic convention. He gave a great speech while she was giving an incredible speech herself in Iowa. So she had a great weekend. And just the more I see out of her, the more I'm leaning towards her. So she has surpassed Uncle Joe for me as my front runner.
Yeah, you don't mean Uncle Joe's out. You just mean Uncle Joe's.
I mean, for me,
he's like not, number two right now, or is he down below?
He might be down below Mayor Pete for me at this point.
Mayor Pete is definitely in the first tier.
Yes, like he is.
He has splashed and he is there. Beto is at 2% and just is not able to connect.
Yeah, it's time for Beto to just call it a day and maybe look at running for Senate again. I don't know. Beto just...
But remember who was turning you on to Kamala first, too. Remember she was my early choice. So in the last rankings, I had her as my number one, right?
I think so, but that's not why I like Kamala. It's not.
Not mansplaining. Okay. I'm saying I'm with you. Like the Schorch household could have a Kamala Harris yard sign, and we would only need one. We wouldn't have to do our usual
split
of your side of the lawn and my side of the lawn.
But we probably still would do it anyways because we don't really like to offend our neighbors.
Right.
Because we have different. We have one party on the left, the other party on the right. It's just amazing. And now that I'm not on a payroll anymore, I care more about that.
Plus, we have to have our Charlie Crist yard sign that he puts in, that he'll come by.
He will come and personally deliver
it out there. And so
he will deliver it to my house within an hour of me texting him and asking for one.
Right. So, all right. Well, I think this will be our last Democratic convention for
a long time.
Like, even I assume they'll be back in 2020.
I mean, I made some new friends.
Right.
I mean, Beth and Oscar, I did not know them before. That was so much fun.
Yeah.
And I look forward to seeing them again. I'll definitely go party with Democrats some more. I just don't know how many conventions I'll be going to.
I think I'm going to have to pass. Again, I go back to what we said in the first podcast. We booked this when we thought this was going to be the presidential cattle call. And so I thought Uncle Joe was going to be there. Mayor Pete was going to be there. I felt like this was a little underwhelming. And so in a limited resource world, you know, where we can't always travel, I don't know that this will be, I don't know if we'll be back for this one again.
Because I just don't know that I can trust them to actually get candidates there for me to talk to.
Or for there to be good champagne at all of the bars.
There wasn't any. Oh, that was the loser of the convention, the bar situation.
Close it down with this one. Why? What happened?
Okay, so Democrats decided to not have the bars open. There were...
Oh, that's right.
There were like six bars that they had set up. So there was a cocktail hour. Well, they closed down the bars in the cocktail hour, which is where we were recording our interviews.
Right.
They closed down the bars in the cocktail hour 30 minutes before the cocktail hour ended.
Right.
Then when you were supposed to go shift over to the dinner, all of the bars were closed.
Right.
Until 7:30.
So you were supposed to go in and wait.
And sit at your table, get seated,
and then
eat a salad course without having a cocktail.
Right.
It just made absolutely no sense.
I guess they weren't trying to raise money.
That's what I mean. Don't they know that people donate more money when they're a little bit drunk?
The Democrats need to send somebody over to the Statesman Gal. You know who the Democrats need to hire? They need to have Joe Gruters in charge of their events.
Oh, I'm sure Joe Gruters would love to hear that.
So, all right. Anything else?
That's about all I've got right now. I'm a little politicked out for the moment. This was a lot of podcast taping in a couple of days.
And a lot of Disney. So we appreciate everybody listening. Thank you for listening to He Said.
She Said.